Parsha Shlach, this week's Parsha, Shlach Lecha Anoshim Yasuru Eseretz Kenan. Parsha Shlach, of course, is a very difficult Parsha for us. The story of the Meraglim is what Chazal referred to as the Bechiya Shel Chinam, the cries over nothing. The cries over nothing, which were the Yesod, which were the foundation for the Bechiya L'Dairos, for the true tears for generations subsequent. The night of the Cher HaMeraglim, Ayifkoham Balayla Ahu, Chazal say, the Gemara says, they cried on that night. That night was the night of Tisha B'Av, the night that they came, that they received the reports of the Meraglim, and it led them to tears, to crying over their fate, thinking they wouldn't be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. And while again the Jewish people then cried Bechiya Shel Chinam, they cried for nothing, Hashem established that night as a night of Bechiya L'Dairos, became the source, in a certain sense, for all the crying which we have over the Churban, over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's a big parsha, Parsha Shlach. And a lot can be looked at in terms of what ended up happening, how the Meraglim came back, and what they reported, and how the Jewish people accepted the reports and responded to the reports. But in a great sense, the Shoresh HaChet, the root of the sin, is seen by Chazal not in what happened later, but in the original concept of sending the Meraglim to begin with. Shlach Lecha Anoshim, says Rashi, Ani Eini Mitzava, I'm not telling you to do so. Im Tirtze Shlach, Shlach Lecha, if you feel like it, you can send. Because the Jewish people came and said, let's send some people who will go ahead of us. As it says, that's what it says in the beginning of Sefer Dvorim. And you said, and they will go and check out the land for us. That was the way the Jewish people came. And Moshe Rabbeinu nimlach b'shechina. Moshe Rabbeinu checked with Hashem. As it says, here, Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe leimar. In Dvarim, when it says the story, it doesn't say Moshe asked Hashem. It just says, Vayitav b'inai ha-dvar, it was good in my eyes. I said, okay, let's go ahead. But here it says, Hashem said it to Moshe, which means that Hashem was involved. Omar, and Hashem said as follows, this is what Rashi says, Ani amarti lem shi'itayv, I told them that it was good. Shenemar, as it says, Ele aschem yoni Mitzrayim, Hashem said, I'll take, bring you out from the pain, the affliction of Mitzrayim, to a wonderful land. So what are you sending Meraglim for? What are you looking into this for? I told you it was going to be good. Chayem shani noyselam mokem litoiz b'divir ha-meraglim uman la-yurashua. I'll tell them by their lives that there'll be room for them to make a mistake, to misunderstand, and to become confused by the matter of the Meraglim, so that they won't inherit the land. Clearly, Rashi places the root of the problem not in the specific Meraglim who were sent, not in the specific report that they came back with, not in the specific reaction of the Jewish people to the report, but in the very fact that they even sent the spies. And the way Rashi reads simply, the issue is, because Hashem said, I told you that it was good, why didn't you trust me? Why do you have to send spies to check out to see if it's good when I told you already that it's an Eretz Taiva or Rechava, that I told you it was a good and wonderful, wide open land? That's Rashi. Many ask, Ramban asks on Rashi, many kashas about what's going on over here. Is sending Meraglim itself something which is always wrong? What was the purpose of the Meraglim? To decide whether the land was good or bad. Ramban posits that the sending of the Meraglim was not if, but how. Not whether they should go into Eretz Yisrael or not, but how they should choose to enter Eretz Yisrael. That they're going and they have to make hishtadlus. And they have to say, what's the best first port of entry that we should do? Which are the vulnerable cities? Which are the cities that if we're going to not conquer Eretz Yisrael at once, which they wouldn't have expected to do, and the Torah told them later even not to, that which makes sense to be our first hits, our first areas of conquest. These were the kinds of things that made sense. These are the kinds of things that make it that even later in the time of Yeshua, the Jewish people would repeat it, and they would look for Meraglim, they would send Meraglim, they would send spies again in the days of Yeshua to take care of these things. And as the Ramban writes, Al Kain Hayatoiv Ve'enei Moshe, Ki Hayukosav Le'ismach B'chol Ma'asav Al Anes. The suggestion, when Moshe Rabbeinu writes in Dvorim, it was good in my eyes, is because that's the way the Torah works. The Torah doesn't rely on miracles. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't rely on miracles. We're going into Eretz Yisrael, we need to check out the path to go. Not that we're doubting Hashem, that He's telling us that it's a good land and we don't think it's good. We know that it's good. But how are we supposed to get it? Tell me the strategy. Tell me the first stop, the second stop. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was searching for. That's what the Meraglim went for. That's what the Ramban says, but Derech Pshat. Not making the sending of the Meraglim itself a chet. He accomplishes many things with this, including, as we mentioned, as we alluded, that Yeshua would send Meraglim. Moshe would send Meraglim. Later in the Torah, when the Jewish people are conquering the west bank, the east bank of the Yarden, in Moshe Rabbeinu's lifetime, Ya'azer, the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu sent Meraglim to check out what was going on at Yazir before he conquered it. Meraglim. Meraglim aren't bad. The Meraglim that were sent here, they came and they turned things around. That's what the Ramban says for himself, the Derech HaPshat. Concludes the Ramban, however. Al Das Rabbi Seinu, Aldas Rabbi Seinu, on the opinion of Chazal, Chotu b'amram nishlucha anashim lufaneinu. They did sin in just asking that we should send the people before us. We should send Meraglim. Bavur sheim royim es Yeshuas Hashem asher yaslam tamid. And the reason was because they saw the salvation of Hashem, what He was doing for them consistently. V'hoyolem loleches achrei ha'onan el asher yishom haruach loleches. They should have followed after the cloud of Hashem's presence to whichever direction it would go, to whichever direction it would be taken. The Anan was leading them. And the Anan was not leading them, the cloud of Hashem's presence was not leading them astray. It was leading them as Hashem would lead them. So says the Ramban, that was their mistake. It's true. Normally, we say, don't rely on miracles. You got to check it out. You got to figure out the wise way to do it. But did Ein Somchil al Hanes apply to the Jews of the Dor HaMidbar? Did it? To the people who went to sleep at night with nothing to eat and woke up to have found bread fallen from the heavens? To them, Ein Somchil al Hanes applies. To the people who Hashem said, go into the desert. Lechtech acharai b'midbar be'eretz lezerua. Follow me into the desert, into a place which can't be planted and developed. Chesed Nuraya, what's called the kindness of our youth that we did for Hashem. To those people, we say, don't rely on miracles. If they didn't rely on miracles, they wouldn't have come out of Mitzrayim. If they didn't rely on miracles, then, I mean, I'm not really sure what the alternative was once they went to sleep at night with nothing in their cabinet, but it goes back again to Be'eretz Lo Yizra'uah. What are you doing there? But the whole tkufa, the whole period, was a period of Ness. It was a period of miracles. Day to day, daily miracles, constant miracles. They couldn't have existed in the Midbar. Right? Exposure would have killed them in the shortest amount of time before hunger would have killed them, perhaps. Lechtech acharei b'midbar be'eretz lo yizra'uah. Hashem puts around them ananei hakavod. Hashem gives them water. Hashem gives them food. Hashem takes care of their needs of clothing, everything. So says the Ramban, for these people, you're going to say, makes sense, Ishtavlus, go and check it out and find out the way to go to Eretz Yisrael. The same cloud which is leading you around in these travels in the desert will lead you into Eretz Yisrael and it will not lead you astray. That was, says the Ramban, according to Chazal, that was the chet. And he goes on, it says, Maisha kibu miyam lamal istavasa. So if that's the case, then why did Moshe Rabbeinu go along with it? If they shouldn't have been doing these kinds of hishtadlios, so then why did Moshe Rabbeinu go along with it? He went along with it to fulfill their desire. He says, if that's the way you want it,
then that's the way we'll do it. When Moshe Rabbeinu says it was good in my eyes, it doesn't mean that he was pleased with it. It means that he says, okay, if that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be. And it's a part of a kind of Vayita Beinai Hadavar. Hashem Tzivo, Sheishlach, and so on and so forth. And it says, Kinin Shenemar, Bishmuel, Shema B'Kalom, L'chala Sheyem Yailacha, Ki Lo Yaischim Asu, Ki Yaischim Asu, Mim Laich Aleyem. Says the Ramban, and this isn't the only time we find it. Does Moshe Rabbeinu, does Hashem always act paternalistic and say, look, you're asking for this, but it's not good for you, I'm not going to do it for you? No. We find here, and we find elsewhere, that we say, if that's the way you want it, that's the way it'll be. And the other classic example which he brings is when the Jewish people asked for a king, which Shmuel was upset about, and Hashem was even more upset about. And he said, look what they've done. Right? Shmuel's upset. Hashem says, they've disdained me. They've rejected me as being their king and their guide by asking for a regular king, a human king like all the nations. But go ahead and give them one. Why? Because if that's where they're up to, then that's the way we're going to do it. Hashem is karev l'chol keirav. Hashem is close to those who call out to Him. Hashem will be there to the extent that we welcome Him. And this is a yesod gadol. This is a very important foundational principle that can be illustrated from many different places in the Chumash. But it's exhibit A right here in the story of the Meraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayita v'einai hadavar, is that Moshe Rabbeinu went along with it. He went along with it. Because while this was not the way for the Jewish people to choose, but if that's the way they did choose, then that was the only way that it was going to be. This is the yesod, which the Ramban says here, is to his mind the root of the chet, the root of the sin of the Meraglim. And this is a very big idea. And it's a very important idea. We can explore it from different vantage points. We can explore it from looking at the Dor HaMidbar and how they dealt with this particular struggle. And we can explore it from the vantage point of how this works generally. This idea that it's sort of a sliding scale. We'll see what you want. If this is the way you want it, then this is the way we're going to do it. We'll start a little bit, talk a little bit about the second. As I said to you, in a sense, it's something which we find in many places. Chavis Halvavis writes about this, and he uses the phrase which was very familiar to us from our tefillos. Baruch HaGever Asher Yiftach BaHashem. Blessed is the person who puts their trust in Hashem. And then what does the verse say? V'hayu Hashem Yiftacho. Hashem will be the source of his security. So the Chavis Halvavis says, put your trust in Hashem, and Hashem will be there. Hashem will be there. It's like the keys, right? You know, here are the keys. You hold on to them, then you have to do it yourself. You give them over to Hashem Yisbarach, and Hashem will take care of it. Hashem will take care of it. Baruch HaGever Sheyiftach BaHashem V'yo Hashem Yiftacho. And it's not a forced matter. It's a choice. It's a choice which HaKadosh Baruch Hu places in our hands. It's one example. Right? Chavis Halvavis writes there that if the person puts their trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Hashem will watch them and will make sure and take care. But if the person instead thinks that their fate is in the hands of their boss or in the hands of their physician or whatever else it is, then Yosir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem will to some degree pull back and say, if they you think that they're in charge, so then Gizunter Heit. They'll be in charge. To some degree, you write the script. The rules will go according to the way you define it. We find it in the Sfarnai. Pasuk says by Shemitah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that the bracha comes for all the 7 years. Chisaymar Manechal Bashana Hashminis. And when you'll say, what will we eat in the 8th year? We're not going to plant. We won't be able to gather in the tefuah. So then it says, I'll instruct that my bracha will come and you'll have so much grain, you'll have it for enough time. Says the Sfarnai. That if the Jewish people don't ask questions, so then they'll have a little bit. But that little bit will go a long way. That's the first bracha. But if you don't trust and you're not comfortable and you say, one second, I don't see how this little bit is going to do it, Then Hashem says, okay, if that's what you want it, so then I'll give a bracha. There'll be tons of grain. And then when you eat, you'll eat like any normal person. Instead of eating a little bit that Hashem blesses inside of you, instead the blessing will happen outside of you. Right? It'll happen that the silos will be overfilled, and then you'll have enough for the year. It's a whole different kind of a bracha. Right? Eichel kimo misbarach b'meyav is that the bracha's in you. You eat a little bit, and you're taken care of. It's a whole different story. But says the Svarna, it's a sliding scale. You ask for it, you got it. Right? That's the way it works. If you open yourself to that, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to you. Huh? What do you mean? Yeah. Yes, each person got a very tiny amount, but it would be enough to satisfy them. So this is a very important principle. And a final illustration we can bring of it is the way the Ramban himself understood, very important understanding that he has regarding refuah. The way he explains the whole notion of refuah and the Gemara's discussion about refuah. Ramban says, Ramban holds, he writes in Bechukosai, that fundamentally, Ani Hashem Refecha, fundamentally Hashem should take care of illness. Hashem brings illness, and Hashem should take care of illness, should take it away. And fundamentally, writes the Ramban, a person shouldn't pursue doctors and shouldn't pursue medicines. Ideally, I'm not telling you halacha l'maisa, in an ideal world, in a time when nevuah shor of Yisrael, in a time when there's prophecy in the Jewish people and you know that it's there for the calling, then, says the Ramban, what's a doctor doing in the house of the God-fearing? And he says, look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, by Asa, who was a righteous king of the Jewish people, and he became ill, he had problems with his feet. So the pasuk says, "Gam b'chol yoylei dorash eso elokim ki im b'roifim." Even when he was ill, he didn't seek out Hashem, but rather doctors. Says the Ramban. Now, of course, he'll tell me what it means is that you go to the doctor, but you also should daven, say the tefillah that it says that you should say when you take medicine or when you do a therapy. He didn't daven. Says the Ramban, if the problem was just that he didn't daven, so then say, in his illness, he didn't daven. Why does it say, but he went to the doctors? Says Ramban, evidently that's part of the problem. He shouldn't have gone to the doctors. He should have said, Ki ani Hashem Reifecha, Hashem is my healer. He should have just turned to him. And that's the way it was, says the Ramban, in the time that Nevuah was Shailat. And that's why it was a claim against Asa. Not just that he didn't daven to Hashem, but that he even bothered anything else. Mikan Shinit Rishus L'Reife L'Rapais, the Ramban says there, permission is given to the doctor to heal. Yeah, we don't tell the doctor you're doing anything wrong by intervening. We don't tell the doctor you're confounding the wish of Hashem. And the Torah says, if a person wounds somebody and that fellow wants to go to the doctor, then you have to pay for it. If he doesn't want to rely on Hashem and he says, I need to be healed, you have to pay for it. You wounded him, you got to pay for the healing. But in an ideal world, in the world the way it's supposed to be, there shouldn't be that way doctor. Ramban doesn't say this halacha l'maisa. He doesn't say it for us. We don't live in the time of Nevuah. So therefore, we can't just say, Hashem, we're leaving it up to you. And we don't do it. But Ramban says, in an ideal world, it would be. And he goes on and he brings the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachas speaks about the tefillah that a person would make when they took medicine. The Gemara is speaking specifically about hanichnas lahakis, a person who's going in for bloodletting, which was a standard procedure which people did for medicinal purposes. They went in to have like an oil change. Okay, so they took out a little blood, and they believed in many ways all illness and heaviness was in the blood. So if you took it out, you allowed it to replace itself, you get fresh, clean blood, it would make a difference. That was good old medicine. So the Gemara says a person who goes in to have that happen, this is what they should say. Yiratzon fanecha, Hashem alekai, ki avesai shetei esek zeli lerefuo terapeini. What I'm doing here should be for me for healing, and you should heal me. And it goes on in the Gemara, and the Gemara says, and I think Abaye says, and you add, lefi shein darkon shol mi'onam berefuois el shenu agu. The truth is, the way of man should not be to seek medicines. But this is what they've done. This is what they've become accustomed to doing. And the other opinion says, no, don't say that. Don't add that addendum. Just leave it that way, because it says, V'rapa yirapa, mikan shenitna rishus l'reifi l'rapis. Says the Ramban, the first opinion, says, look, we're doing this medicine thing, but we really shouldn't. It's just that people have become accustomed to do it. Says Ramban, that's the point which I'm telling you. Ideally, you leave it in the hands of Hashem. People do it already. Okay, so people do it, so then Hashem says, if you are putting it in the hands of the doctor, then go ahead. And I'm also going to some degree subject you to the doctor. So you're still daven to me. You realize I have a role, but in a sense, your hishtadlus, your effort, the direction of your effort, that's in front of you with this person who's going to heal you, who's going to address it. But the Gemara itself, the tefillah itself, reflects this duality. Should we be doing it, or shouldn't we be doing it? People do it, so Hashem understand people do it. The maintenance of the item or the issue in the hands of Hashem is a lot of what that tefillah is about. Yeah. Yeah. Again, the Ramban doesn't say halacha lemaisa that a person should do this. Ramban frakert in the Torah Sa'adam, he makes no matter where he gives halachic advice about bikur chaylim and hilchas chaylim and hilchas raifim and hilchas avelus le'olayin rachman al-san. He certainly seems to be saying people should use such things, people should go to doctors. However, that's what he writes in terms of the ideal world there. And there's no clearer incidence of the ideal world than there was in the situation of the Jewish people when they were in the Midbar. When the Jewish people were in the Midbar, that's the ideal world. That would be the place, if any, where we wouldn't look for a raife, we wouldn't look for a doctor, we would leave it in the hands of Hashem. And we wouldn't look for miraglim, we would leave it in the hands of Hashem. Asa, if one studies that story over there of Asa, that the Ramban is citing for the purpose of the doctor's thing, the other mistake of Asa was his over-strategizing when it came to the battlefield. There also, why wasn't he relying more on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In certain instances, that's the claim. So now that we've talked about that idea generally, and the idea of recognizing, leaving things in the hands of Hashem, that the more we take control of it, the more, in a sense, we end up with control of it, the more we've taken control away from Hashem. Let's look a little bit more at the story of the Jewish people in the Midbar, which the sin of the Meraglim is the ultimate sin, the one which takes them over the top. Because this, to a great degree, is the issue. Klal Yisrael challenged Hashem 10 times in the Midbar. We seemed not to be able to get comfortable with life in the Midbar. And it seems quite clear that this is the biggest issue. The biggest issue is not the specifics of the diet and the fact that they were hungry for fleishigs. The issue, more than anything else for the Jewish people, was a resistance, a discomfort at the matzav of the Midbar, at the state of affairs for the Midbar. The Netziv wrote about this in his introduction to Sefer Bamidbar, where he speaks about this idea that the Jewish people wanted to be able to do things. They wanted to be able to accomplish things to some degree on their own, as independent human beings with their own abilities, with their own power. That was the Jewish people's desire. Everyone likes to be able to be independent. From the original sin of Adam HaRisha, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, just don't eat from that one tree. But Adam HaRishon ate from it. Why? Because he specifically wanted that tree? Or because instead of having his whole being and his whole life defined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to some degree he wanted to be able to do it himself. That's what he wanted. And so, that was the Shirish, that was the root of his chet, that was the root of his sin. When the Jewish people sinned at the Egel, to some degree, as we talked about last week, right?
The issue is the dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem tells them what to do. Or are they going to build it for themselves? They're going to build it for themselves. Life in the Midbar was a life of the ultimate non-capacity of the person, where the person has no koyach, has no ability, has no resources to be able to make it. They are hisyatzvu uru es yeshuas Hashem. Just stand here and watch what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do for you. That was all the Jewish people could do. They could only watch when these things were happening in the Midbar. And now the question is going into Eretz Yisrael. Is Eretz Yisrael going to be that way or not going to be that way? And you could understand that when they go back and they go into Eretz Yisrael is a land where they could work and produce, where they would be able to do things on their own and survive on their own. They could build for themselves houses and plant for themselves vineyards and all of these things and be able to make it based on their koiches, based on their effort. Maybe that's what they wanted to look forward to into going into Eretz Yisrael, because that would be what we call normalcy. But to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu completely that He's going to get you in there is a contradiction to that normalcy. If you're trying to attain normalcy, which means you're going to do things on your own, then let's figure out how we're going to conquer it first on our own so we can be delivered into that matzav, into that situation. But that wasn't the way the Jewish people went about it. That was the way the Jewish people wanted to go about it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu really did have something different in mind for Eretz Yisrael. Say Chazal, had the Jewish people not sinned, the same miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim would have been the miracles of Bias HaOretz. Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavor Amzu Kanisa. As you passed. They would have had open miracles. Ruyim Hayu Yisrael. Right? Now, here, the Chazal compared the days of Ezra, the second time the Jewish people came back to Eretz Yisrael, to the days of Yeshua. With Yeshua being the time of Nisim, of miracles. Which is true. There were many miracles in Yeshua's conquest of the land. Yericho. Different places. There were miracles when the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael. However, Chazal say there's also two notches there. Had Moshe Rabbeinu taken the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't have even needed Klei Zayin. They wouldn't have even needed a weapon. Nothing. They would have just gone in. Hisyatzu uru es yeshuas Hashem. Stand and watch Hashem's salvation. Now that sounds dreamy, great, terrific. You don't have to get weapons. You don't have to fight. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do it for you. But on the other hand, we people are not comfortable with Hashem doing everything for us. It's just the way it is. We want to be able to do it ourselves because we have a desire for independence. And it seems, by the way, that there's not necessarily always true that that desire is a terrible thing. Chazal taught us that Hashem made us as Balei Bechira, as people of free will, so that we would be independent. So that we wouldn't just be what Hashem made us, but we would be self-made. We would be what we make ourselves by the choices that we make. It's a positive thing, in a certain sense. We speak about the negative thing of Namad Kisuf, of the bread of shame, where somebody just gives something to you. So there's a positive aspect to the Jewish people wanting to do things by themselves. But on the other hand, here, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking them through the Midbar and bringing them to Eretz Yisrael, still, says the Ramban, there's a claim, there's an issue with the Jewish people about their resistance and the fact that they don't want to see it as coming completely from Hashem Yisbarach. They want to be able to do it themselves. They want to be able to take care of some of it themselves so that they are not, in that sense, utterly dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the beginning of the end. That's the beginning of the failure of the Meraglim. Because indeed, when that's what you're trying to do, you're trying to figure out how you're going to be able to do it, how you're going to be able to accomplish it on your own, right? When you're doing that, so to some degree you are pushing back and rejecting the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not being willing to accept it. The Gemara in Saita, the Mishnah, in the end of Maseches Saita,
The Mishnah says as follows. It's describing the period of Ikvisa de Mashicha. And it speaks about certain things which are also characteristic of the story of the Meraglim. Na'orim pneis kenim yalbinu, that the young shame the elders. Sekenim yamdu mipnei ketanim, old stand up for the young. Ben menav elav, child disgraces their father, ridicules their father. Bas kama bima, daughter to their mother, and so on and so forth. And then it says, right, which if you look in our parsha, you see it describes, you know, they all stood up there. Rashi says there was no hierarchy of elders and youngers, right, similar to what's described here. And it ends, and it says, v'amal yesh lanu lishoyin, what can we rely on? Al avinu shebashamayim, on our Father in heaven. That's what it says. That's the final comment, the last words. With all these terrible things happening, what can we rely on? We can rely on our Father in heaven. It's well known that the Rav Chanan Wasserman said that this is not a postscript to the Mishnah, but this is the last curse in the Mishnah. The last curse in the Mishnah is when people say, what can we do? We have to turn to the Rabbeinu Shalom. People have to realize there's much that we can do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to be people of action. And we see all kinds of things going on around us that we can do something about. Then we don't just say we're going to sit here and wait to see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do. But rather, we go with it. We go and we do whatever it is that we can. Right? Ki hashosos yehoresun tzadik mapo'al. When the foundations are being broken down, what did the tzaddik do? What did the tzaddik do? What did the tzaddik do to do something about it? You know, there's a hesped that's published from Rav Shmuel Razovsky, the great goyin, the reshiva of the Panavizhi yeshiva, that he said on the Panavizhi Rav. Panavizhi Rav, who saw the world go down in the Holocaust, and he dusted himself off from the dust of grief over his wife and children, Layalein Rachmana Litzlan, and he set about to rebuild the world. So he said, his hesped was this pasuk. Ki ha-shasais yeh-ha-reisun. Shasais is like the foundations. The foundations are broken down. Tzadik ma-po'al. What did the tzadik do? When we see things breaking down around us, what do? We have to be moved to action. So Rabbi Chanan said, that's the Mishnah. All kinds of things are going and everybody's head is spinning because the world is turned upside down. And they say, oh, we need Hashem's help. There's nothing we can do. And he says, what are you talking about? There's plenty you can do. You have to do things. You have to do things. And you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you. That's the way he read as part of the Kola. But of course you know that the simple pshat is not like that. The simple pshat in the Mishnah is that you have all of these things. And in the end you say, this is helpless. The only one who can get us out of this is Avinu Shebashamayim, is the Rabbeinu Shalom. And in a certain sense, that's the point of Yeshua. Rav Tzadok writes about the fact that we always find, right, the Gemara says, the Geula comes mitoich hesach hadas. You give up. You say, forget about it. It ain't happening. Right, you stop even thinking about it. And then the Geula comes. Why? Because that's the nature of the Geula. It is Miyad Hashem. It's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram and Sarah, they're 100 years old, they're 90 years old, and they have a baby. Right? At that point already, there's a certain yush, certain despair of it ever happening in a normal way. To the extent that you believe in Hashem, you still believe that it can happen. But it's a situation where the human effort has come out empty, is stymied. And so we know it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the way Hashem brings us Geula. That's the way Hashem brings us redemption. That's the way Hashem brings us positive things. Where we gave up on anything else, and we really need the Rabbeinu Shalom to be able to provide it. A positive thing. At that point in time, you turn, you say, it's the Rabbeinu Shalom. Where do we find this in the Chumash? We find this in the Chumash when Moshe Rabbeinu was sent to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So he goes to Jewish people, he gives them a message, they get all excited, they go to Paray, and Paray is not nearly as excited as they are for some reason. And Paray says, no way. Right? You think it was hard till now. Now I'm going to make it really hard. And the Jewish people became upset. And Moshe Rabbeinu turned and was upset with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem said to him, Ata tira asher asel Mitzrayim. Now you'll see what I'm going to do to Mitzrayim. Now you'll see what I'll do to Mitzrayim. Lepare into Mitzrayim, because he's going to send them out with a Yod Chazaka, with a strong hand, and so on and so forth. So what's the pshat? What does it mean that it gets worse? And then Hashem says, oh, now you'll see it. It has to get worse, essentially, before it can get better. Why is that the case? What's the nature of this that we say, now you'll be able to see? Till now you wouldn't have been able to see, but now that this happened, now that you despaired of all hope, now you're going to be able to see. So to some degree, it's this idea. The Jewish people had the mitzvim that were supporting them, that they were relying on. They were also struggling before them, but they were relying on them. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Shemayim, and he says, Hashem said, I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim. So the Jewish people go to Paro, they say, Paro, could you please send us out of Mitzrayim? Are they relying on Hashem? Maybe not completely. Maybe without Hashem saying them, they wouldn't have the nerve to go, but in the end they were going to go to ask Paro. And they were going to rely on Paro sending them out. Of his own free will, mind you. He would send them out of Mitzrayim. That won't work. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go to Paro, and you'll see you're going to get no help from Paro. Paro won't be there for you at all. And then you'll be able to see what I'll do. If your Paro goes along with it, then how much of me will you see already? But if Paro refuses, and Paro rejects, and Paro hardens his heart, and so on and so forth, or Hashem hardens Paro's heart, then when redemption comes, you know and you see that it's coming from the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the staging of Geula. Everything breaks down, and you say, in truth, that there's nothing that we can rely on. There's no Derech HaTeva here. There's no natural way. It's going to have to be because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it. Ki ani Hashem refecha. Because I am Hashem who healed you. That's the only way. Now, it's something we choose. Or do we say like Rabbi Chanan, come on, pick yourself up, try to do something. Right? Make your effort. Sadiq Mapoal, what did you do about this to try to change the situation? But here lies the difference. You see, when the Panim Hisharav saw the Holocaust happen, he wasn't witness or ear witness or eyewitness to any specific promises or prophecies from Hashem. Hashem just said, spoke through his actions, and there was terrible destruction. So the Panim Hisharav picked up and said, look, I've got to do something to be able to make a difference back. But when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, Hashem had told them, go and I'm going to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. There, are they supposed to try? Are they supposed to make ishtadlus? When Hashem is saying, I'm going to do it, I'm going to take you out, where Hashem reveals himself? Or is that the kind of time where you say, don't assist Hashem. Hashem said, I'm going to take care of it. Leave go. Leave go and let it be in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Atotira. That was forced. When they went to Paro, and Paro said, forget about it, I'm not going to do anything for you. Oh, now you can see. Atotira asher asu Mitzrayim. Now you can see what I'll do in Mitzrayim. Because we saw that we couldn't rely on Paro at all. We saw that we couldn't rely on Paro at all. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks, and when you see that you can't rely on Paro, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to take you out, then that's the most beautiful situation. And for the Jewish people in the Midbar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to them, through his actions, as it describes in Devarim, Kasher Yisa Ishas B'nai V'chol HaDerech Asher Alachtem Ad Be'achem An HaMakayim Azeh. You saw how I carried you like a father carries his child all the way. I didn't have you do Hishtadlus. When the father carries the child, what's the child do? Nothing. He doesn't walk. He doesn't have to hold the luggage. Right? Everything is going to be carried by Hashem. That's what Hashem wanted the Jewish people to see. That's what I did for you in the Midbar. And that's what I'm ready to do for you in Eretz Yisrael. but you're not interested. You're trying to learn how to walk. You don't want to be a child carried around anymore. We're uncomfortable with that. We are uncomfortable with that. But that stood in the way, in this case, of our being able to have a geula, because we have to do it ourselves. And when we do it ourselves, it fails. It's not matzliach. It's not going to be, in that sense, so successful. Now, I want to say this, to talk about this. There are different things you can always talk about in every parsha on the Torah. I wanted to talk about this because I think that, you know, in some sense, there's some healthy reminders that we have of this. And in the very, very unpleasant and very difficult and very dangerous situation which Kol Yisrael faces now, this week, we've had such a perfect reminder for what we have here and what we're talking about here. So you have the story of this flotilla, right, taking things to Gaza, and so the Jewish people. You have people over there who want to murder us and want to kill us and will smuggle in anything in any which way that they can. So the Jewish people secure the borders to protect themselves from these avowed enemies. And then people want to dafka break it. And they say, we're not going to let you break it. We have to maintain control over here. Whatever's on your thing, you don't break it. We're maintaining control over here. What happens? A very unfortunate story. Were they so prepared? Were they not prepared? But look what you have a chance. All you have to do is turn on the radio and you listen. And what do you find out? You find out that we're mamish by ourselves. We're mamish by ourselves. The Jewish people are mamish by themselves. That everyone doesn't even want to hear. I mean, you hear some notable exceptions, of course. But by and large, nobody wants to hear. Nobody wants to hear, oh, your Jewish people support their efforts, they have to protect themselves. It's no, what are you doing? How could you hold back humanitarian things from these people over there? They're living in such difficult conditions. Of course, people should ideally not live in such difficult conditions, such terrible conditions. But, you know, what country at war has done the kinds of things, you know, that Eretz Yisrael has done for their sworn enemies, people who want to kill them? But nobody listens. This is our situation. And it's good to hear it. It's good to hear it. You know, I had a conversation with somebody today in Eretz Yisrael, and two people on the phone. And one of them said, Obama was supposed to go to, Netanyahu was supposed to go to meet with Obama, and I had to cancel the trip. He can't go. Other said, it's good. It's a good thing. You know, like, it's true, it is a good thing. Every time they go, what happens? We think again that our fate is in the hands of this country, in the hands of these people, and we bend over backwards to do something for them. We don't remember that we're on our own. On our own? No, we're not on our own. Not on our own. We have to realize that Geula comes when Ein Lanu Lishon El Avinu Shebashamayim. Strategies don't help. Releasing videos don't help. Public relations campaigns don't help. It's amazing. You could put out all the most beautiful explanations in the world, and nobody will be able to hear a word. Because, Atotira. Because now you'll be able to see. Now you'll be able to see. We don't rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu enough. We just don't. We just don't. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand is open, we push it back. We don't live in a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is open, hands open in the same way as it was in the Midbar. We don't see it. But nobody will help us. Nobody will help us. That's the way it is. Okay, we can find a friend here, a friend there. But the Yeshua comes from welcoming and saying, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we have to put in your hands. Again, I'm not, what am I advocating? Advocating like no hishtadlus, no political efforts or anything else. Of course, that's not the way we do it. It's not the way we do it in a time of gullus, in a time of hiddenness.
But all those efforts, it's like the efforts with the rife, with the doctor. It's something that we need to do. But not to think that we're in the control of the doctor. We make efforts with nations, but not to think that we're in control of the nation, in the hands of the nations. And sometimes it takes Paro to reveal his fangs and say, "What? I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to do anything." For the Yeshua to be able to shine through, for it to be able to be seen, for it to be able to be visible. The Gemara says that one of the Amirim, it's a story with Rabbi Barbar Chanan, Rabbi Yechanan, he saw him swimming in the yard, whatever it was, he said, "The Rabban Shalom hates you. Hates you, Babylonians." He says, "Why does he hate us? What do you mean he hates us, Babylonians?" He says, "Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, he sent through the hands of Cyrus, the king of Persia, he said, 'Mi b'chem mikol amai,' whoever is amongst you from the people, whoever wants should go up to Yerushalayim and build Yerushalayim. Hashem gave you that opportunity in the time of the Bayis Sheni, the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. And what happened? A tiny fraction of the Jewish people went 40,000 and change. You guys, you stayed in Bavel, Hashem hates you. Had you gone to Eretz Yisrael, the second Beis Hamikdash would have been more glorious than the first. Would have been Mamish Geula time. But because only a paltry sample of the Jews went, that's why it wasn't so successful." That's one opinion. But then the Gemara says, I think Rabbi Yechanan says, no, it's not true. It's not why the second Beis Hamikdash didn't turn out so great. You know why the second Beis Hamikdash didn't turn out so great? Because it says, Yafta lekim l'yefes v'yishkoin ba'al eshe. It says, Hashem will make things nice for Yefes, but he'll dwell in the tents of Shem. So the Gemara says, basically, the first Beis Hamikdash was built by the children of Shem. It was built by Shlomo HaMelech. And therefore, Hashem dwelled there. But the second Beis Hamikdash was built by Yefes. And one of the children of Yefes is Moadai. One of the children of Moadai is Kairish. So since that was the tent of Yefes, Hashem didn't live there. Hashem lived only in the tent of Shem. The Beis Hamikdash was a shadow of its former self. So I always have thought that those two pshatim are really one. In a sense, they're different, because one of them is blaming the Jews for not going up. The other one is saying, well, it's the circumstance that made it, who it was built by, that made it that the Shekhinah wouldn't be Shara there. But tell me something. Why didn't the Jews go up? They didn't go up to Yerushalayim because Kairish told them to go. They didn't hear it from Hashem. There was a nice king, and his name was Kairish. And he said, you know, Jews, you want to go back to your homeland? Go back to your homeland. And so they said, oh, thank you very much. You're a very nice king, Kairish, and we'll go back. Some did, and some didn't. You get an invitation from Kairish to go back home. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. He didn't say you have to. He said you could. If Hashem would have come, and he would have said, come! Come to Eretz Yisrael. It's time to go. Would 42,000 have gone? Or would everybody have gone? That's what Chazal mean. The first Beis Hamikdash was built in the hands of Shem. It was in the hands of Shlomo HaMelech. It was internal from the hands of the Jewish people. We understood what we were doing. We understood where we got it from. The second Beis Hamikdash was built in the hands of Kairish. So the Jewish people didn't take it so seriously. And therefore they didn't come to participate in it. They didn't see it as being something from the hands of Hashem. They didn't see it as being something from the hands of Hashem. And that's why it looked different, and it ended up being something completely different. And their reaction to the opportunity was completely different. When we meet a nice king who lets us go, we say, thank you very much. We don't have the experience of Gilui Shechina, the religious experience of Geula that makes the whole Mikdash turn around. That makes things happen completely different. We don't have that experience. So, I don't know. You know, the United Nations said the Jews should have a homeland in Eretz Yisrael. was the last coherent thing the United Nations said. You know, and the fascinating thing, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik in 1953 said a big drasha about Eretz Yisrael after the Sinai campaign. And he said a big drasha in early years. He wrote there the following thing, incredible. He said, you know, you see the Hashkachas Hashem. What's Hashkachas Hashem? He says, Hashem created such a thing as the United Nations for one thing, so that they would be able to finally give the Jewish people back Eretz Yisrael. He says, will anything else ever come out of the United Nations that's a positive value? Who knows? Hashem just created it for this thing. Nevuah, you know, it's a fascinating thing to say that. But in a certain sense, it's hard to relish. I turn it on, I listen to the radio about these things. It makes me crazy. It makes me so upset. But on the other hand, it makes it clearer. We have to know it. This was the sherish of the Chet HaMeraglim. This was the root of the Chet HaMeraglim. According to the Ramban, according to Chazal, the root of the Chet HaMeraglim was we tried to do it ourselves. Not ourselves as opposed to other nations. We tried to find our way, figure out how to do it, b'derech. We have to realize that we get it from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And in a time of a midbar where it's clear, we don't even make ishtadlis. Now we make ishtadlis. Now we do make efforts. Of course we make efforts. We don't throw caution to the winds. But we have to remember, like they should have then, that our koyach is going to be mitam avinu shebashamayim. Like Rav Chanan said, pick up your hands. Do whatever you can. You can't sit around and watch. It's not that tkufa, that era that we live in right now. Do whatever you can. But remember, still, that ein lam lishon al avinu shebashamayim. And sometimes we have to lose our friends in order to understand that our ultimate friend and our ultimate source is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shemayim. So halavai, at least we could take something from it in these times, which are, it's going to be very rough, as it seems, the kinds of issues and pressures which Klal Yisrael face now. But it should be an opportunity for us to see Siyatzvu Uru'u Es Yeshua's Hashem, to be able to stand and watch Hashem. Save us.